Love this podcast? Support this show through the supporter feature from Acast. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hi guys, and welcome to this week's Snugcast. It's a fucking pleasure to bring to you a stellar crew this week. I'm your host, DJ. I've got Owen with me as usual. And Owen, how are you getting on?
Good, yeah. Really looking forward to tonight. We've two great guests, as Ryan Tuberty or someone might say. one of those hosty lads.
I'm going to call it straight out here. We've two bollocks with us tonight.
Yeah. But yeah, no, I was gearing up for this there today. Down to the offie, got a few cans. Actually, got bottles. And currently drinking a gift that you gave me a few days ago. So we'll talk about that in a bit.
Brilliant.
But yeah, doing well.
I love this level of preparation where like you thought we were recording tonight because you went to the offie just in case, because you text me 10 minutes before you came on to see if we actually were. So I love your optimism. I love your optimism. And yeah. Coming on to our guest then, just to introduce one of the guests it's his second appearance on the Snugcast now. He's been on with us during COVID lockdown, and he did such a good job.
Veteran.
Yeah, we invited him back on, and I think he's gonna blow us away with a few observations throughout the hour or so. Peter Breen of the Port Leash Pub Club. Peter, how are you getting on, man?
Great, yeah, you're putting a lot of pressure on me there, though, I have to say. I was, yeah.
Give us some insight. Come on, Peter, give us some insights.
Yeah, no, the last time, I've never actually even been on any podcast before, so thanks for popping my podcast cherry, lads.
That's all right. speaking of cherries, another food is a kiwi, and Owen, we are the 239th most popular podcast in New Zealand.
Yeah.
Nice segue,
yeah.
Hey, man. Imagine what I'd be like when I finish the can, but yeah, Peter, you were great the last time on. It's brilliant to have you on again, man. Thanks for making the time for us. And speaking of people who are trying to make time, one of the highlights of lockdown so far for me, two of the highlights of lockdown so far for me have been the virtual beer festivals that have been set up by the craft beer community with the guys over on Beer Cloud. So Brian Cahill, craft beer community, fucking an absolute pleasure to have you on, man. How are you getting on?
Yeah, good. Thanks. Good. Thanks for having me, DJ and Owen, and great to be on with Peter as well, esteemed company. All good. Thanks. Cheers. Cheers for having me. Unfortunately, my podcast cherry was popped a couple of weeks ago by Wayne and Janice Dunn on the Beer Snob podcast. But this is number two, you know, and the sequel is always better. That's what they say. 100%.
Yeah, and actually, lockdown was one of those things that impeded us from eventually linking up with Wayne and Janice to have a couple of pints and record an old episode, a crossover podcast. But Wayne took issue to the fact that I shared that you might be coming on this podcast this week. So I think we've lined Wayne and Janice up for early July to come on the podcast when over Zoom, unfortunately, at that stage. But definitely, like, I think when all this is over, I think that the entire craft beer consumption community around Ireland are going to end up getting together somewhere.
That's a great name.
I'm coining that term now. Like, you know, I've already submitted a trademark. So
CBCC.
Yeah, I've just changed Brack's official name on the website now.
Yeah. The CBCC, not to be confused with the Christian Brothers College. just to get in there. Peter, something I've been meaning to read over the last couple of days since you published it was your most recent blog. Sorry, I haven't gotten around to read it, but what was it about? I know it's definitely it was about pubs reopening, I believe. So can you give us a bit of insights into what was on the blog this week?
It was basically a post about microbreweries, local, you know, small breweries. We all kind of go on about them every so often, talk about, you know, trying to encourage them and support them. But I'd never actually written down why you would want to support one of these breweries or distilleries or whatever. And it's kind of, I suppose, aimed at people who maybe don't normally drink craft beer or whatever, and just kind of lays out what it means, like what microbrewery means, what craft beer means, what it means to be local, independent, etc., and why should you care about that. I mean, if Guinness employ Irish people, buy Irish grain, what's the difference? You know, you're still supporting Irish jobs. So I tried to lay out, well, what the actual difference is and why you should still support these small local businesses. And that's kind of it. And why, you know, obviously they cost a little bit more. There's no avoiding that. And why you should spend a little bit extra.
Do you think like the mentality of people is going to have changed because of this, because of lockdown, because of pandemic? Like, I think, like, even just around here, around Waterford as well, like, you definitely do see a lot more people just buying local and, yeah, you know, like, I suppose they see the power of keeping somebody in a job like that. Like, it actually, yes, just really affects people that, you know, you actually just see people losing their jobs if they can't go. Whereas, like, if you go to Tesco, or say if Tesco loses a bit, you don't see, they just take that hit. Like, you know, they're making massive amounts of money. Like, whereas I think definitely, like, local produce and stuff like that. And I just wonder, does that translate into the beer community? I'd say it has.
I think it does, yeah. Like, I think this lockdown has kind of, I would say, I mean, I can only speak from my own experience, but it's definitely, for me, it's made me think about, you know, shopping local more. And, you know, whether it's like, get deliveries, for example, from the local greengrocer, which I'd never really go into every so often before now. And, you know, stuff like, I don't know, there's some hot sauce guy that I came across on Twitter. Like, he's in some lad in Wicklow making hot sauce, and I bought, and it's brilliant, it's lovely stuff. Bought peanuts today off family, you know, business down in, I can't remember where it was, but I think it is. I think this is kind of something that's been going on for a while. I think people care more about where their food comes from. It's been around for a while with meat and things like that. But I think it will happen with beer as well, and even whiskey. Like, there's actually a new distillery down in Waterford. Waterford Distillery. They've started making whiskey that's single origin whiskey. So it's made from barley from very specific farms. So they're trying to do the same thing that you would have with, like, wine, where it's like, you know, it's from a particular region and that kind of thing. So I think people are starting to care more about where things come from and local jobs and local employment. And
I think that whiskey in Waterford has, like, completely sold out, isn't it? Like, as in, they had like, I think whatever initial batch they had, say 1,000 bottles or whatever, like, and it was invite only kind of thing. And
yeah, I think they did sell whatever one they launched first. I think they sold out. And the next lot is, I think, just a lot of demand for it as well.
Yeah, yeah. And Brian, like you're a man now who'd be on the internet, as they say, and you probably see the old passage of beer. Like, do you think that people are shopping more local, that they're kind of supporting these local breweries a bit more because of this? Like,
yeah, absolutely. I think you touched on it in your initial question to Peter when you said it's the beer community and it's the local community, and just I think communities in general are phenomenal in Ireland at rallying together. Be it local, geographical based, or interest based, or whatever. I suppose that's the reason why it's called Crack Beer Community as well. It's just bringing people together around I suppose a product that is beer, but the ethos of it is a community. It's people facing. It's about getting people to I suppose meet each other, learn from one another, chat to each other, and just have fun. But yeah, I think so. The community aspect is huge. You can see it, as Peter was touching on, saying people supporting local breweries, that's happening everywhere. Supporting local farmers going down the road. Irish people are absolutely phenomenal at it in terms of supporting local.
And even businesses supporting each other as well. Like breweries quite often collaborate with each other and help each other out. And,
yeah.
Yeah, even in terms of like lads sharing grains and things like that, like, you know, from local farmers and things like that, that, you know, it's like across sectors as well. Like, it's not just the breweries helping one another. It's, you know, like just lads with like spare fucking hops or whatever, just throwing them into a brewery or whatever. Like, it's fantastic.
That that leads me on to something on that. Sorry, but that actually came across, Brian. You might actually be able to make the same point. I was just going to say that some of the brewers even were talking about the feasibility of actually growing hops and just the need for space to do it in the last virtual beer festival. Like, there's a lot of brewers and there's a lot of farmers who are into brewing as well. When you look at the likes of Ballyclickhaven and stuff like that, who are seeing opportunities to diversify and new ways of doing business out of this. So, Brian, like, what have you learned through your interactions with the breweries over the last 3 months, I suppose?
Yeah, I suppose just the innovation from some of them has been incredible. And even, this is way pre-lockdown, but as you said, with Ballyclickhaven and Joe there, and sorry, and David, realizing David taking over the family farm, and he was nearly thrust into brewing by fear of losing the family farm. Because it wasn't generating enough income through growing barley, so they started brewing beer, and that's where their story came from. It's absolutely brilliant.
And not to mention, they have a fantastic farm down there. It's like 400 years old or something. It looks really good, and he's renovating the farm as well, which is fantastic.
Yeah, no, it's brilliant. Their social media account is stunning, and just how they run it, doing the views and the tours of the farm and stuff like that. It's absolutely brilliant. They tell a story through it as opposed to just beer, if that makes sense. It's really, really good. One thing, just the beer community, and before we go on from it, again, Owen, coming back to your point, what's I think is incredible to see the breweries. So you've got like 100 odd microbreweries in Ireland, not all of them with their own brewing kits or whatever, but 100 odd brewing individual breweries, you can say, and all of them are essentially vying for 2.5 to 3% of the overall market share. They're all in competition with one another. They're going for that same 2.5-3%, everyone. But in spite of that, they still all come together. They all help each other out. They all lend ingredients or equipment or whatever. Like, it's, I suppose, co-opetition, you could call it, but like that, they all band together, even though they're fighting for the same market share. That's, I think it's amazing to see. It's really, I don't know, inspiring or whatever.
It is amazing to see, and it's also not as counterintuitive as you'd think either, because ultimately, if you think about attitudes to craft beer in Ireland, certainly, Owen, like when we would have been in college together, if somebody had a craft beer and it was bad, one craft beer, then all craft beers were written off as shite. That was kind of the culture towards craft beers.
I make you sick as well. Them craft beers, but they make you sick. Yeah, stay away from them.
Fierce gassy as well.
Fierce gassy, yeah.
They're like the opposite of old wives' tales. They're like fucking ignorant young man's tales. Like, you know, they're fucking this kind of notion that craft beers are shite and make you sick. It absolutely was true, though. It was said, it was rhetoric when we were going to college and stuff. So I suppose counterintuitively, the craft beer industry in Ireland driving each other on, making sure that they keep a high standard, ultimately will lend itself to gaining more of that market share of 2.5 to 3%. Like, it's something we've spoken about in the podcast several times about how does Ireland get to a 11-12% share like the US craft beer industry has. And it'll get that way by quality, really, is my honest opinion. And certainly stuff like, you know, Peter's blog that is constantly championing locally brewed craft beer, and Brian, what you're doing with the craft beer community, like opening up people, but even people who consume craft beer like myself, who the craft beer community...
Just yourself.
Just myself.
All for me.
I mean, as the only person who attended any of the virtual beer festivals. Virtual beer festival has opened my eyes to breweries that I otherwise never would have seen. I might have come in contact with over a night away somewhere on a once-off basis, whereas now I'm like, right, I need to fucking keep my eye out for this because it was brilliant, which is a really, really good fucking thing.
I think we were singing the praises as well of the craft beer community there a few weeks ago, and I was kind of given the story of how there would have been, like, say, beer tasting nights and, like, you know, say in pubs or like a new brew night or whatever, and all the brewers would come down, like, you know, say, or in the locality might come, and they might all have a few drinks. But as a beer consumer, you kind of felt maybe a little bit detached from that community. I don't think the brewers intended it to be very clicky or anything like that, but it's just that the fact of, like, they have such esteemed knowledge about all these beers, and, like, they're coming in and they're, like, you know, they know each other and they're chatting away, that it was a very hard thing for you to come in and go, I'm going to join this, I'm going to stay here for the night, I'm going to join this kind of community for the night. Whereas I thought, like, what you've done with the craft beer community has kind of, like, added the beer consumer in amongst the brewers as well. And, like, you know, it's kind of like a platform, basically, just to be able to chat with them and then amongst other beer consumers as well. Like, so well done, Brian.
blushing. I'm a huge advocate for it's like, it doesn't sound bad, I don't generate any revenue whatsoever out of what I do, but I'm going to use the term, people don't buy what you do, they buy why you do it. And every decision I make, everything that I do to kind of progress progress crack in general, is based on asking myself the question, is this going to help grow the industry? Is this going to help introduce beers to new people? Is this going to help brewers who are struggling at the moment? And by doing that, it's kind of enabled to think of kind of weird and different ways and kind of new ideas to try and support breweries first and foremost, keep the industry afloat at the moment. That was kind of start of COVID. That was the real panic. It was like, oh fuck, which way is this going to go? But then they're actually coming out stronger, which is amazing. Well, some of them. But yeah, so just doing that, kind of creating an open, welcoming community. One of the taglines is beer snobs welcome, beer snobberies not. So it's kind of like, no matter what your experience, no matter what your, level of beer knowledge or whatever you want to call it, you're welcome in and to join in. And I just getting feedback from the last one there. I got an email from a chap, Richard, who said, himself and his boyfriend joined in the festival and they got the pack, and his boyfriend does not drink beer at all. He said he wouldn't drink it, and he said the two of them, they sat down and they enjoyed it so much. He tried the beers and he really enjoyed it, and he's kind of open to trying new beers now. You know, it's amazing to see stuff like that. That's the whole reason why
you're a gateway drug.
that's how you get from 2.5% to 11% or whatever it is. Like, unfortunately it's the way it is. One person at a time, one drink at a time, one tap in a pub at a time, you know, it's slow progress.
And I think that whole myth that we had during college or around that time of, like, a craft beer being like this metally heavy, you know, like, I don't know, just terrible beer, like, you know, that again, like, similar story with Kira, my girlfriend, wouldn't be a beer drinker, would normally drink wine, but, like, I've had Cast Away by Yellow Belly Beer, the passion fruit sour, and, like, she'll, like, just rob my pint glass off me, like. So like I said, it's amazing. It's like, it's just like, you know, inviting or like introducing people into the different types of beers as well, like, you know, that's very cool.
Speaking of different types of beers, lads, I want to find out, what are you drinking tonight? So Owen, I'll come to you first. What are you drinking tonight, pal?
I'm on a little gift from you. So it's Kinnegar's Oland Tart, apple sour, and yeah, it's lived up to your hype, man. It's been really, really good. I don't even know how to describe this beer. Like, it's like it's so appley but not cidery. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's delicious. I absolutely love it. It's a real mouth-watering one as well. Like, you're like, every taste you get, there's just like more and more saliva building up in my mouth. I'm just going to be like like big pool. I won't be able to talk in a bit. But yeah, really, really good. It's such a good summery beer. I'm going to say this is the bridger. This is going to be like a summer, autumn into stout season bridging beer, like.
I'm all on board with that. Like, I've actually got four cans of it in the fridge that I'm bringing down to my brothers on Sunday to drop it off them.
Yeah.
And the only reason that they've lasted this long is because I know they're going to enjoy them so much. I couldn't live with the guilt if I drank them on them. Mm. They're, it's a really good beer, lads. Have you come across it, Peter or Brian? Oland's Tart by Kinnegar.
I've had a few in my time. Yeah, I've that, and I've got Glen's. What's Glen's sour? Is that the lemon one?
Oh, yeah,
the citrus dry hop lemon sour. Yeah, citrus dry hop sour is. That's a fucking belter. I actually had a can of that last night.
Kinnegar are just, they just consistently knock out absolutely brilliant beers. You know if you're buying one, you know it's not going to be bad. Like, it's just they're so consistent. It's consistent. Nearly sounds like it's like not a compliment, or it's, you know, it's like, oh, they're consistent, but no, it's like every, you know, if they release something, it's going to be really, really good.
Reminds me, I was going to go down to Mother Max in October because they were doing takeover.
Yeah, absolutely. That would have been it.
That's not going to happen now.
It would have been an absolute treat. Like, the off license across the road from the hospital here in Watford actually carries Kinnegar. Like, they're all the way up in Donegal, so to the opposite side of the country to us, but it's a blessing that we have access to them, because it's definitely up there as one of the best breweries around. They're non-stop fucking hits. So thanks, Owen, you're welcome. I gave you that can the other day, so I'm glad you let people know how generous I am. Brian, I'll come to you next. What are you drinking yourself, man?
Oh yeah, I'm sorry, I'm on the Altogether by Whiplash. That is it's a worldwide collaboration brew. And I think it's Other Half Brewing in New York, I think they started it. Yeah. And it's basically so that they started this worldwide collaboration for brewers all around the world to get involved. They created a recipe and shared it with people and said, brew this in your local area, wherever you may be. And the only rule or deal with it is you have to donate proceeds to hospitality workers in your country or your region or your area or whatever. So it's pretty cool. It's nice to know it's a very good beer, and it's nice to know that it goes towards helping hospitality workers, because they've had a pretty raw deal as of late.
So what, the brewery donates, is it, to get the recipe, is it?
The brewery, no, the recipe is open source, and then they'll brew the beer, and then whatever profits they make from selling
the
beer.
Oh, yeah. That's cool, yeah. Very brilliant.
Good. Yeah, it's a nice initiative.
Sound, and what kind of beer is it, Brian?
IPA, this one. I think
interesting colour.
Yeah, I think that's it's very Whiplash, isn't it?
Yeah, I was going to say.
I can't see my head through it. So I think they released, it's kind of like the same recipe, but they said use this yeast if you're on a West Coast IPA, or use this yeast if you're on an East Coast IPA, kind of New England style. So this, in Whiplash style, they've gone New England, East Coast style. And it's, it's good beer. Nice.
Yeah, East Coast style is fairly popular at the moment. I'd love to see some West Coast coming online.
Yeah.
That was a big topic there at one stage in the last Saturday, Brian. It was, definitely, but it's a great initiative, and people, loyal listeners of the Snowcast and overall for fucking stuff that helps give back to people who are worse off. So spot on. All Together Now by Whiplash. If you're down your local brewery and you see it, you know you're supporting down your local off license, sorry, and you see it, you know you're supporting a good cause by getting a few cans in. I'm gonna go next because I'm gonna leave Peter to last because I just love the man so much. So actually I'm drinking a can that was part of the last virtual beer festival pack. So unfortunately I had to leave at 7:30 just before the tasting of this took place. So it's Bambrick's Brown Ale by Ballyclickhaven. So again, Peter, a beer that I know you're probably overly familiar with because you're a big fan of Ballyclickhaven, and Brian, one that you were very complimentary about, I believe, last weekend, and rightly so. Like, what I couldn't believe, because I was there for the chat but not the tasting, and I had to go, so I didn't actually open it. I couldn't believe this is Joe's first attempt at a brown ale. That kind of, I was like, fuck me, man, because I've heard brilliant things about it. I hadn't actually had one. I'm going to edit this out. Because
it's a mute on there.
Yeah. I hadn't actually had one of these yet. However, it's fucking delicious, man. Like, some serious toffee off it. Like, this is the thing, like, brown ales often get mistaken for stouts, and you'll get like chocolate stouts and coffee stouts, etc. But this is like fucking, it says in the can burnt toffee, and I was like, right, how are they going to get this? But as soon as you smell it and taste it, then it's so familiar. It's fucking delicious, and it's fucking really smooth, man. It's really, really fucking drinkable.
Yeah, I used to ever really like brown ale. I kind of had a few of them. And I had that in, I think it was that festival they have in Kilkenny, that food festival. And he was just sort of trialing it out or whatever. And as soon as I drank it, I was like, I was converted. It's really, really good.
Yeah, I think there's a big surge for them. As you probably saw last week, DJ, at the beer festival, it was every single brewery we asked what they wanted to see them brew next. It was a brown ale was the answer. And there's a few cracking ones out. Like St. Mel's have been making an amazing brown ale for a long time now. Yeah,
I actually have it. Yeah, when this glass is empty, it's going to be filled up with the St. Mel's brown ale. That was in the first box, Brian, which was really interesting. Again, like the first box, the first beer festival was on early enough, so I was trying to pace myself. I was doing every second beer. How do you manage to keep it all together doing 6 hours of drinking and hosting and trying to fucking organize everything?
I don't know. I actually don't know. A lot of people have asked me that. I don't drink every beer in the box. I drink kind of half-ish and put them aside. And my wife is usually pottering around the kitchen, or she's sitting beside me and she'd have the other half. Or I wouldn't get through them all now, but I don't know.
And you had a brilliant observation to make for one of the brewers last week when they were talking about brown ales. It was actually Ballyclickhaven when Joe and David were saying that they didn't think there'd be any demand for a brown ale in the summer, and all of a sudden they've done two batches later. And like, as you said to them, when the world zigs, you zag, like, and it's been a fucking knockout success this summer. So brown ales, man, and it's one of them things that, like, yeah, man, if I was in a restaurant, if I was in a pub now and I saw a brown ale on the menu, I wouldn't be overly drawn to it straight away. But it's this kind of thing that we're saying, even people who drink craft beer and are into craft beer, when they see a new style and they're not drawn to it, or a new style for them and they're not drawn to it. But once you get into something like a virtual beer festival or a real beer festival before that, and you sample something, you try it and you learn to like it, it just opens up a whole new fucking style and a whole new slew of beers to fucking love, man. It's brilliant. And this is definitely something that I'll be going back to without a doubt.
We'll have to do a trip to Newcastle.
Oh, Jesus. You know what I mean?
Peter. The brown ale really didn't make it in the box. David was angling for the line blocker. Like, this is such a testament to Ballyclickhaven as a brewery. They had the Raspberry Vice, which was their summer seasonal that came out, the raspberry wheat beer, which was amazing. So that kind of had to go in the box straight away. But David was kind of saying, well, maybe the line blocker then. And it was there were a good few IPAs in the box, but they know what a massive fan of Bambrix I am. I have my own homebrewed version of Bambrix out in the shed at the moment. I absolutely love it. So I was just like, please, can we put Bambrix in? He was just like, yeah, grand. But like the fact that it was, there's more than three, but those three absolutely incredible quality beers. And yeah, you had to kind of, it was a tough decision which ones to put into it. Yeah, brown ale, great beer. Need to get more people.
Yeah.
Talk about another consistent brewery.
Well, that's it exactly. Like Ballyshacavan never fucking fail. And the beauty of Ballyshacavan is like, you know, it's pretty much like as local as it gets because they produce so much of the ingredients. They pretty much produce all the ingredients themselves, bar the hops, isn't that right?
They actually brew one batch of beer a year with their own hops as well. They harvest them in October and they make a fresh batch on that day.
And ultimately, like that's like when you're talking about high quality produce, like as you said, another consistent brewery, Peter, but high quality as well, like such high quality. Peter, what are you drinking yourself, man?
Why are you laughing?
What do you want to laugh at? Because I was so tempted to say to the listeners, like, you know, oh, recording this at like 12 o'clock in the afternoon, which we're not. Yeah. Right?
So I decided to go for something a bit different.
Breakfast meeting.
This is my breakfast whiskey. Yeah. I usually pour it over my cereal in the morning. I decided to go for something a bit different. I'm not sure if, we normally drink beer on this, but
Whatever you're drinking, man. It's whatever you're drinking.
I've kind of gotten into whiskey a bit, I suppose, recently. It's the Velvet Cap. It's the Waterford or Blackwater Distillery down in Waterford. They've been doing gin up to now, and they still are. I think they have one in Aldi. It's really good. Really nice, smooth whiskey. Lovely kind of vanilla, kind of syrupy. I'm not very good at describing them, but that's, you know, it's good. I promise I won't start any fights, though. This is just the one I'm going to have. I'm going to have a O'Hara's Hop Adventure Centennial.
Oh, snap!
But man, love it. The first time I had it, I really liked it. And then I had a couple of bottles of it again, and they were kind of flat. So I'm hoping.
This one is good anyway. This one is very good.
So I might have been just something wrong with the last ones I had. But I'm prepared.
Super. Do you get does anyone get aggressive around whiskey? Are you anybody? Yeah, you're a big aggressive whiskey head, Brian. Yeah.
Oh yeah, yeah. Starting fights left, right, and centre.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say I get aggressive, but I get very drunk with it, and like the next day is just hell, absolute hell. So I've actually just tried to avoid it altogether. I like what Peter's doing now. I'd like to maybe like sit here with the chat and have one. But unfortunately, when I decide to start drinking whiskey, it's never a one whiskey time.
So, yeah.
Last couple of years, I went to Whiskey Live, which is this like big thing, kind of, what would you call it? A big event where, I suppose like a festival, where all these distilleries show up and they, you know, you get to taste all the whiskeys and it's like whatever, 40 quid in, and you can drink as much as you want, essentially. Now you get thrown out if you're pissed. But you know, for 45 quid or whatever it is, like it's not bad. Like, and then
no.
First time I went, I did get a bit drunk. Like you would, like they're very generous, but they're just supposed to just give you a little drop, like to taste. But sometimes they give you like nearly a full measure, so you really do have to pace yourself sometimes. Really.
Yeah, just going stall to stall, like every 5 minutes,
grab them by the scruff of the neck, fucking whiskey in pockets.
And this is something we kind of have been touching on the last few weeks, lads. Peter and Brian, I really wanted just to get your insight into it, especially when it comes to like, you know, Peter, you're saying you're going to have a drop of whiskey first and then tip into the beer. Is lockdown and not drinking in the pub but drinking at home instead, is that changing your habit of drinking or your choices or what you'd reach for?
For me, not a lot, no. I mean, I do drink at home as well. I mean, obviously I'm not drinking in the pub now. Missing it a lot, obviously, but no, I'm probably just drinking more or less the same amount, just not as much in the pub or not any in the pub.
What about yourself, Brian?
Yeah, for me, I think my alcohol consumption has probably gone up a bit, but I'd say that there's correlation and causation here, and I'd say it's more related to do with starting up crack. and hosting virtual beer festivals and stuff like that has led to an increase. I myself and my wife, we would be more home drinkers, to be honest. I probably should have told you this before coming on, or else I wouldn't have got invited if I did, actually. I wouldn't be a huge pub drinker myself. I enjoy obviously meeting up with the lads and kind of having a few pints and stuff, but in terms of pubs, I'd be more kind of go in early-ish, one or two, kind of chill out, sit at the bar, maybe read a book for a bit, and then tip on. I do the majority of my drinking at home already before lockdown. Like,
Brian has been disconnected from the podcast.
I'm gonna say, you know, like, there's a lot to be said for going in and having 2 points and reading a paper.
Oh, yeah,
great,
no, so. Oh yeah.
Like, sitting there on your own, watch the world go by, you know.
Yeah.
Some of my best memories of the last 2-3 years on have been tipping into Philip Grimes after work just for one or two while it's quiet and heading on home, then, you know, that fucking quiet time where you have a chance to have a little chat with the barman and just fucking chill out, man, and unwind. There's a lot to be said for it. Speaking of sitting at a bar having a pint watch this week, lads. So just to bring Brian and Peter up to speed, pint watch is something we've been doing every week. And it's where we basically take little snippets that we've seen in the previous week and try and guess, like, when will we next be sitting in a pub and able to have a pint without any strings attached. And by a string, I mean a chicken curry or a fucking cheeseburger and chips. So when will we be able to have a pint unhinged? So I suppose just a few things that I picked up on is that the stuff in the media recently. So basically, like, what constitutes a substantial meal is something that I find really interesting, because that's been brought out about this June 2019, where pubs are not required to have a restaurant license. But now they're saying that you have to be able to provide a substantial meal with the drink that you're providing. So I suppose, like, it's this kind of thing that we said, like, does this bring a whole new meaning to the interpretation of bacon fries? Like, you know, will a packet of bacon, like, do you have to distinguish between a packet of bacon fries and a plate of chips with some bacon on top? Or, but I suppose that's something that I wanted to check with you guys. The other thing that might be worth discussing around the four of us here as well is a lot of our predictions have been based on whether or not the government would give in to the demands of the industry to reduce their restrictions from 2 meter social distancing to 1 meter social distancing. And actually today they were saying that the Tony Holden was like, the data is very clear, it's 70% risk at 1 meter and 95% risk at 2 meter, and that they're not going to take any unnecessary risk. So I think 2 meters, it looks like it's going to stay for now. And I suppose then the other thing as well is we had the other thing in the media that I picked up on was this public health experts. There's over 1,000 people involved in public health, doctors, medical scientists, immunologists, virologists, etc., that signed a letter saying that they wanted lockdown to continue, a hard lockdown to continue for the next 2 weeks to crush the curve and then have a bigger escape out of lockdown at the end of it, not to have this measure that started this week. So there's a lot to take in, I think. But I just wanted to get some of your insights. Like, I think this is going to be the most key 2 weeks for just general society, but for the scope of this conversation, this is going to be a key 2 weeks for people who want to go and sit in their local pub and have a pint. So with all that in mind, and is there anything else that you spotted that might lend to July 20th being brought forward and moved back, or is July 20th when it's going to happen? What do you think, lads? I'll open the floor up to whoever wants to jump in.
I'll jump in there first. I think July 20th is going to stick. I think phase 2 plus, whatever the fuck they're calling that, was, I think that was their generosity there. I think that's what they're going to go with. And yeah, you might see other things, but I just can't see the pubs again. I think even with, like, the likes of Penny's and stuff opening up there today, like, it was just absolute... I don't know, it's just people, there was no social distancing or, like, viewed at all beforehand. Now there was the ability for Penny's to try and control the social distancing within Penny's itself by having staff that were around the floor who were, you know, telling you to wash your hands and all this shite. Like, but again, for, like, a pub, like, I know as we've been talking to a few people involved in pubs, like, they have, like, you know, very few staff anyway. in the pub. Like, so it doesn't, like, and they're going to be having reduced numbers because of this. So, like, they're not going to be able to hire people to actually tell you to keep your distance or whatever. Like, I just think, I still think, like, there's going to be just have to be a huge education piece within, like, just, I don't know, within or by the government, within the population, just to try and get this social distancing thing into people's heads. Like, at the moment, I don't know, I think the message has been missed a little. Like, I think it's kind of been, I don't know, maybe a bit diluted in terms of all of the measures that have kind of been lifted in recent days. But I just think, like, that it'd be great if they just kind of hammered home this whole thing of, like, you know, hand washing and, you know, face coverings and stuff like that are the key. And I also think as well that they haven't really said much about, like, people who are coughing and, like, just stay home. Do you know, like, that has kind of lost its meaning there in the last while. I think, like, you know, if you are coughing, or, you know, even if you don't have the virus, you're a person who can then spread the virus anyway. Like, even if it's, like, asymptomatic, or you pick something up, touch your face, blah blah blah, and can spread it. So I don't know. I think there's still a lot of work to be done, and I just can't see it being pushed forward, unfortunately. What about the rest of you guys?
Fair enough. Brian, do you want to jump in there? Have you any thoughts?
Yeah, well, just thoughts on the situation in general. I'll be honest, I haven't been monitoring the restrictions and what's been going on in the news too much. But for me, my stance on it is, I guess there's a triangle here, and you're looking at, you've got the economy on one hand, politicians, and then you've got health. Those three factors. And the way I would look at it anyway is, economies recover, politicians will recover if they're under pressure now, if their popularity goes down, but health won't. If people die, then you don't recover from that.
This is a stupid observation.
Yeah, well, exactly. So, like, what's the priority there?
What about Jesus?
Yeah. True. He's actually going to be at the next Spirit Festival here. So, like, honestly, yeah, I think it's really, really tough on people. It's tough on people's their situations at home, their wages, like everything, their financial situations, their mental health, absolutely everything. I totally get that, and I'm not unsympathetic to it, but I think just people's health at the end of the day is first and foremost and paramount. So I think the restrictions should be strict is the wrong word, but as enforced as long as necessary.
Yeah, I think it's as long as necessary is the key one, and yeah. I don't envy the people deciding when is necessary, like, because it's a fucking terribly hard decision to make. Peter, what's your own thoughts on all this, man?
Yeah, I pretty much agree. Like, I don't think I agree with Owen. I don't think it's going to be brought forward. I mean, it's already been brought forward from the 10th of August to the 20th of July. So I just don't think they're going to bring it any closer. And then in terms of the distancing, I don't know. I could maybe see by the time we get to closer to the 20th of July, I could maybe things might change. You know, if the numbers stay down low, I could see maybe they might consider going down to the 1 meter, because it's just not workable in a lot of pubs, in restaurants, in smaller restaurants, cafes, hairdressers. I mean, how do you do it? Like, it's just not.
Yeah.
It's not feasible in a lot of places. So I know it's not it's a choice between, as you said, Brian, health and, you know, the economy, and, like, you always have to choose people's health over money. But I don't know, at the same time, like, how long are we going to be like this? I mean, the virus isn't going away anytime soon, like, until we get a vaccine or something. Like, that could be another, you guys will be able to tell me more. It'll be more than a year, I'd imagine.
You're not getting a vaccine in the next 3 years, because by the time they develop it and upscale it to manufacture to be able to distribute it worldwide. And the problem with a vaccine is, it's not like, oh, we have enough, we can upscale and distribute a vaccine to the top 10% of wealthy people in the world right now. Like, a vaccine or virus doesn't fucking discriminate. So, like, you need, like, that's the whole controversy around herd immunity. In order for a virus to go away, you need the vast majority of people to have immunity to it via either a vaccine or exposure, or else you just need to culture it. That's what they've done in New Zealand. Like, they fucking locked down heavy. I know they're like 20 days without a case or something along them lines.
But then they open things up again, then what happens? Like,
the thing is, they don't have, it's not present. They don't have any virus there.
Yeah.
So if they open things up, so long as they don't, like, when it comes tricky, then is like, getting
borders.
Yeah, because when China suppressed it was people coming into the country once they opened up again that brought it in. So it's a funny thing. It's impossible.
Maybe it's testing is the other thing as well. Like, if we had good, easy, quick testing that, you know, you as simple as walking into a pub, you have to, I know it's a bit weird, but you'd have to be, I don't know, tested.
Maybe that's a bit extreme, but. They had this thing demonstrated on Clareburn Live the other day where it was like a scanner and a kind of thing that you had to scan your face and it checked your temperature or whatever to let you into the building. I know they had them in the WLR studios for Waterford Radio a couple of weeks ago, and then they were showing it in Clareburn Live. As basically they were saying that shops and restaurants could use it. I do think there's this thing, right, where I think, Brian, like, you hit the fucking nail on the head with one of the points is, like, you know, you've got the economy, politicians, and healthcare. And ultimately, politicians are, if politicians were judged on the outcomes of healthcare, the last government wouldn't have lasted as long as it did. Ultimately, they're judged on the economy.
And any government wouldn't have lasted.
Yeah, that's it. Like, and what we got here is, like, the economic argument is starting to wane. And I think that the politicians have made the choice to, but they're very anti 1 meter now. But then a week ago, they were saying there's no way that anything could be moved forward. And then on Friday, they announced all these fucking, everything moving forward. As one said, for phase 2.2.
Actually, I just to cut across you there, sorry. But so the office I was in earlier on, they obviously had one of the original signs for social distancing or whatever, but it was that recommendation of, like, you know, it was like stay 2 meters apart where possible, but there was this like thing in like in brackets saying like, oh, but you know, 1 meter social distancing is effective. So like, it was, that was the initial guidance that came out, that was that saying, like, if you were like 1 meter was effective, and that if you were I think was it if you were with like an active case or something like that, like healthcare workers or something, that a 2 meter distance then was but then obviously everything they went very safe on things in terms of 2 meter distancing as the social. But I just thought it was funny that they still have that sign just plastered across the front of the place.
I can see. Yeah. Like, I mean, I think 2 or 3 weeks with little cases could make a huge difference.
I think what will happen is when it comes on the Friday before, when on Friday the 26th of June, I think they're going to reduce it to 1 meter and say that all pubs and restaurants can open. I think that's what's going to happen.
Well, on the 29th of June, do you think that all pubs are going to open?
I think that's what's going to happen if the figures stay low. I'm not saying it's the right thing.
What are you drinking?
I've moved on to St. Mel's right here.
He's got the whiskey first.
It's a bit more bitter than the Bambrics, but it's still lovely. I think that's what's going to happen. I'm not saying it's what should happen, but I think that's what will happen.
A bit of a kick in the teeth for the pubs who have prepared themselves for essentially being a restaurant.
Turn around
and say you didn't have to do that.
It will, but then the other side is then other pubs get to open. The thing that troubles me with it all, right, is there's this thing about face. Do you use face coverings? Blah blah blah. How the fuck can you wear a face covering in a restaurant or a pub? Like, you can't consume drinking food with your mouth covered. You know, it's physically impossible unless you're consuming it via a fucking catheter. Like, so I just don't see how that should impact on it.
I think once you're inside in the pub, definitely not, because you should be seated at a table, you know, with 2 meters or whatever away from a person, so that the face covering then, you know, is negated by that distance. Whereas en route to the pub is where, like, that public, like that public system is where you do need to wear one. You know,
I remember hearing something about UV light systems can be effective in keeping the virus away from, you know, enclosed areas. Is that a possibility?
So I think that's a cleaning thing. It's in term. So I think like the UV light. I think they're trialing it out in Dubai, in those huge shopping centers that they have in Dubai, whereby they're flying drones around at night when the shopping center is closed and like putting off this big huge UV light that kills the virus, but it's obviously without human contact because it's quite cancerous.
I thought it was something that you could have, you'd essentially
be turning bars into tannin silence. which you know, there's a percentage of the population that's their fucking dream, but
it'd be nice and neat.
lie down on the bar and get a tan.
You go for a pint of black and tan.
Hey,
well, I've been disconnected again from the podcast.
We're not about the black stuff, we're about the brown stuff at the moment, man. We're all about the brown ales. So in a scenario where I'm wrong and 29th of June you can't go to all pubs, and it's still the 20th of July, like I think you guys are suggesting it will be. And so you can go in and have a substantial meal, whatever the fuck a substantial meal, the definition of it is. But you can go in and have a substantial meal and be served in a pub by table service. What impact does eating have on your drinking habits? Like, for example, if you're going to a pub to have 3-4 pints, or Brian, in your case, if you're going sitting down to have 3 or 4 cans versus sitting down with your home cooked dinner, or if the rest of us are in a restaurant and going to have a few drinks with a meal, does eating and what you're eating and eating a substantial meal over a packet of crisps or whatever, does that impact on your choice of drink? Peter, what do you reckon?
Choice of drink? Maybe not so much. How much I drink definitely would have impacted, because obviously you're eating and it just, you wouldn't naturally drink as much. But I suppose it depends on what I'm eating. If I was eating a curry or something, I wouldn't be on the brown ales or the stouts or anything like that. I'd be more lagers and, or kind of lighter ales and stuff, you know, something cold and refreshing. But pretty much anything else, I might drink anything. If I was eating like a roast dinner or something, I'd be happy enough to drink a stout with it or something, but kind of spicier, hotter stuff.
Yeah. But you're having one or two and that's it. Like, you know, you're cutting it off.
Yeah.
Then, or,
yeah. Well, I think you'd have to, if the pub's open as restaurants, I'm assuming it's a rule like you have to have a drink with the meal. So as soon as you finish the meal, you're done.
Good point. Brian, what about yourself?
Just to follow on Peter's point there, yeah, I suppose it depends if it's like a restaurant and you have your time allocated seatings and it's like 2 hours in your spot and you have your meal and your couple of pints, or is it like you can go in at like, I don't know, midday on a Saturday, have your substantial meal and then sit there for the whole day. I suppose that kind of could dictate it. For me, it changes the experience entirely, I think, for me. You're gone from kind of a pub to obviously more of a restaurant, and that's the point of it, obviously. I don't know. If my drinking habits would have changed it, I don't know, to be honest. I'm more, as I said earlier, a quiet drink or two here and there, and maybe actually having the food as well. So I don't know if it does actually change anything for me personally.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
And Owen, what about yourself?
Yeah. I don't know. I think it's, again, kind of to echo Brian there, like as soon as you put a substantial meal into the equation, like the focus is on the meal rather than the pints or the chats or anything really, like, you know, I'd also like to say that like, the amount of bacon fries I eat on a night would probably be a substantial meal. So like if I'm in a pub for like 4 hours or whatever, and there's like packets of crisps, peanuts, bacon fries, whatever being landed down in front of you, like you're definitely eating as much as you would for a meal. So I don't know. I think I don't know if anybody listened to the Blind Boy podcast there this week, but he was kind of talking about like the mentality that there is in Spain and stuff, the way they have these kind of like tapas and stuff. And that's kind of built in with their drinking culture, is that like you order a pint and you order like a paella for the table or whatever. And, you know, people, big huge dish comes out and people dish in and, you know, take, you know, it might be served on a bain-marie or whatever, so that like stays hot and that you just kind of tip in and tip out of the thing, like, you know. Obviously you can't be doing that, but like even if there was like individual portions of like these kind of like smaller meals, like you don't have to be tucking into a roast there just after work on a Friday, like, you know what I mean?
I think the Irish equivalent of that would be like a big platter of sandwiches.
Yeah, yeah.
My throw out.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, jam sandwiches.
Cocktail sausages.
Cocktail sausages, like chicken goujons or something. Yeah. So, I there's definitely like a niche time where I probably enjoy a pint and a substantial meal. So like if I'm going for a carvery of like a lunchtime or something, and I don't know, it's just like there's definitely times that I would enjoy it, but like ultimately, like, I don't want to be forced to have a big meal. Like, even say sometimes, like, you know, DJ, we've gone out for like work nights out or whatever, like, and you know, you're kind of raring just getting into the pints, and like, yeah, just for the social
meal
situation,
is in the way,
you have
like,
to have
food,
yeah, the
food
is in
the
way, like, yeah,
yeah.
And
the more you eat, the less room you have.
Exactly, that's exactly it, like, you know.
So this is what ultimately drove this question, because I was thinking about before COVID when I would go for a meal, and ultimately it's this kind of thing on where we're going out and we're going for a social meal with friends, but ultimately we're going out for a couple of pints afterwards. And the first thing you do when you go to one of these restaurants or gastropubs or whatever is you order your drink. And part of me is like, actually, it should be the fucking other way around, because you should order your grub that you're going to eat and then think about what you want to drink with it, as opposed to like, what'll often happen to me is I'll be just in the mood for whatever drink I'm in and I'll order that drink. And then the menu will come and be like, oh fuck, I couldn't have that with this now, it's too heavy. You know, if it's a vice beer or something, you're like, oh, we're going light tonight. Like, so I just wonder, do we conventionally get that order mixed up? But you all make some pretty fucking good points there, to be fair to you. I'm actually fairly conscious of time, because the conversation has been going so well that we're gone over the hour mark now. I suppose the other thing I just wanted to point out was a question that was put to us on Twitter, really, really good question, ultimately was about it's keeping in line with COVID and what folks will be like post-COVID, is bars like the Temple Bar and those, the kind of tourist bars where you've got your €8 pints and stuff like that. Now that the tourism sector is ultimately killed off for months, what do we think? Like, they were previously, like, you look back, there's YouTube videos of like brilliant Irish musicians in bars like this way back when. And I suppose that's ultimately what drove them to become the tourist attractions and hyperinflated bars that they were. Will COVID reset those bars to go back in search of some of its previous character and try and draw more Irish local drinkers in now that the tourism industry is gone? Or ultimately, are they going to hold out for the tourist industry to come back and to be able to maintain charging astronomical prices for pints? Peter, you're not in the good books with the Dublin pubs at the moment.
No, apparently not.
So maybe we'll come to you first on this. Have you any more controversial views that we can maybe climb up to number 238 in the New Zealand charts with?
I hate to be cynical, but I think they're just going to hold out and wait for the tourism sector to come back, because it will come back. And you know, it's all to do with location. They're right there, smack in the middle of the city. They're right next to, Hayfinney Bridge, the O'Connell Street, the rest of them. Like, they're right there, and it's just the location. And they're gonna milk it for what it's worth. You know, I think they're just gonna hold out.
Brian, what's your
I tend to be quite optimistic in a lot of scenarios, but this is one where I'll have to agree with Peter. I can't see them. I can see in the short term that there have been some kind of maybe minor kind of pivots or like shifts in their approach and how they're, portraying themselves and what they do in terms of trying to get people in. But as soon as tourism is back, I can't see them not going back to the way it was before, because they're just cash cows. Like, they were just absolutely making a fortune. So, yeah.
And there's only so much pivoting and you can do as well. Like, drinking and where you drink is habitual. You know, people drink in certain places because they like it and they've always been there and they've always drank the same thing and they like that particular pub. It's hard to change the appearance of a pub in Temple Bar, you know, over the course of a few weeks or a few months or whatever. So,
I'd agree, Peter. Like, yeah, like those pubs are, like, I don't know, nearly fucking what you'd expect when you're going to an Irish bar in New York or something. Like the way they're laid out, like they're very foreign targeted the way they are, and like a pub is more than what beer they're serving or what price their pints are, really. Like, it's character, it's who the barman is, it's, you know, how it's laid out, all that, like, you know. So I don't know, it'd be very hard to change a sticky floor in Temple Bar to a character building bar, like, where, you know,
to be fair to them, no, some of them are pretty decent, like the Halfpenny Bridge Inn or whatever it's called, that's a nice spot. The Porterhouse is in, that's in Temple.
Porterhouse is nice, that's quite good.
I'm trying to think of other ones. I think the Foggy Jew is technically Temple Bar. That's quite a good spot as well. So there are some, you know, and the Storehouse there is not too bad either. I mean, yeah, it is inflated prices, you know, but that's just open for you, really.
Yeah.
Especially that area.
I don't think we're really talking about Temple Bar, the area, rather than like those
Temple Bar.
Sellouts, yeah. You know.
Yeah.
Well, not even just the Temple Bar, but like, you know, there is pubs there that just like
of the same ilk
hone into that. Of the same ilk, yeah, exactly. You know. I have had a good few nights around Temple Bar all right myself, like, you know. But what do you make of that incremental pricing thing as the night goes on? That's disgusting. Like,
it drives me mad. It drives me absolutely.
I don't know how that's
how it justifies. It all.
It's the same product. It's the same.
Same wage.
DJ, will you explain this for our foreign listeners here? Because I'd say this is completely bananas to everyone.
So to make it really simple, imagine you go into a pub at 5 o'clock in the evening, and you get charged €4 for a pint, and then you're still there at 7 o'clock and you get charged €4.20 for a pint of the exact same pint. Let's say Guinness, because it's the fucking prime example. So it's €4 for a pint at 5 o'clock, €4.20 at 7 o'clock. 4.60 at 9 o'clock, and by 11 o'clock they're charging €5 for a pint, just to keep the economics simple. Like, that happens quite frequently. In places.
And that's a mild example.
Yeah, that's like ultimately it happens, but at a scale probably twice that.
I think I got charged €7.80 for a pint of, I think it was probably Guinness actually, at like half one, like.
I mean, ultimately, like, we're here talking for the last fucking what is now hour and 15 minutes of great chat about quality beer, brilliant breweries, and like the fact that we're talking about consistency being an absolute fucking an absolute compliment as opposed to put down in these instances. And what I just want to fucking say about it is you've got mass produced shite being charged €7.80 a pint, like, you know. When we've got like some of the best crap, some of the best brewing and technique around, and we have people complaining about spending €5 a pint in parts of the country for what's really, really fucking good.
You pay for quality.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and that's what I want to say. Like, you know, and the thing is, like, I don't care how good a pint of Guinness is. Give me a fucking pint of Maidaza or something like that, you know, in the winter all day long over it.
Sometimes they're actually, you'd be surprised, they're actually the same price or not even, or slightly more. Like in my local pub, they had Ballycleckavin Bin Bawn Pale Ale, and they're charging €4.50 for it, which is the same price as a pint of Guinness. So, you know, you'd be surprised. Now, in other places, it's €5 or it's €5.20, but, you know, which isn't that much more when you think about it, really.
No, no,
It's actually something I want to do. I was kind of an idea for a next blog post is to kind of do a post on affordable
craft beer. We actually had a good chat about this last week on the pod, Peter. Called Economics.
Yeah. Oh, right. Okay. So, I'll listen to that for my research.
Ultimately, we reckon you're only paying about an extra €2 for the sitting in a pub, as you would do sitting at home. So Brian gave us the thumbs up, but I reckon he's going to change his mind now. lads, I'm taking a wrapping it up there now. We're coming on an hour 16 minutes, I think, recording. So any summary points? What you any kind of last words for the guys and gals out there that are listening to us?
I'm just looking forward to pint in a pub. I'm really, really gearing up for it. I have two pubs. I have a pub just around the corner from me here, that definitely does food. So although there hasn't been, I thought like by now there might be a bit of like sprucing up of, you know, the pubs or whatever. Like, you know, there's another pub across the road from it actually that I glanced in the window there the other day, and they're down the hands and knees there, just polishing off the tables and stuff. And it looks like they're doing a bit of work on the beer garden and stuff out the back as well. So, exciting times ahead. I'd say they might throw a fucking, I know, substantial BLT or something in out or something to get them open. So, yeah, really looking forward to the end of the month.
And Brian, any last words there before we finish up?
Yeah. First of all, I'm just absolutely delighted to have the opportunity to open up the New Zealand network. so this is a fantastic opportunity. And thanks a million, lads, for inviting me. I really, really appreciate it. Great chats. One last point for me, just on the pubs, is I guess it does come down to experience, and we've talked about, I suppose, Temple Bar charge and extortionate prices. People are happy to pay that for the experience there when they get to the touristy market anyway. I suppose experience at the moment for our drinking culture, our pub culture, the drink is first and foremost. It's always the pints, and the food has been secondary. But now we're going to a phase where the food is actually becoming primary and the drinks are kind of becoming secondary to it. And our experience of the pub and our culture, our pub culture is going to be shifted drastically. So I'm just looking forward to seeing how it plays out, basically, and see how people adapt to it, how publicans adapt to it, and just see what happens. That's it, really.
Super. Great point. Peter?
Just thanks again for having me on. Really enjoy it. And support your local your local pubs when they open up again. Remember the antics of that gobshite from Wetherspoons, whatever his name is, when the pubs reopen.
When's the next pub club?
Oh, fuck knows.
29th of June, is it?
29th of June.
I would
curry
like to
special.
Do
special.
Yeah,
chicken curry provided with attendance.
Yeah. Chicken curry it's out.
Well, actually, if he had one dish that he could serve? So if he owned a pub, right, and there one dish, what would it be?
That's wings.
Wings, yeah. That wings is a good one. Good shout. Now, I actually think that could be. If that could be like denoted as substantial, I think it'd kind of hit the dual market there of like the bridger between bacon fries and a roast.
If you allow me to be really boring, I would say a toasted sandwich and a package of crisps. But as an upgrade from that, I would say pizza. Pizza always goes good with beer.
Yeah, pizza's a good one. Good shout as well, actually. Got your... I asked the question, I'm leaving an ocean. Like,
and it's fairly compact as well. Like, you can probably cook pizzas in fairly small ovens. Like, so if you didn't have a big kitchen.
DJ, what about you?
I'm going nachos.
Nachos.
Yeah, that works.
You've got a crisp like yolk. You've got your, you can have your chili beef. You can have whatever the fuck you want. You can have your, you can satisfy your vegans, your vegetarians, whatever the fuck you want. I'm going nachos. And it's another thing like Brian's wings where you can just pick them.
And Peter's pizza.
And Peter, yeah, sorry, Peter. I was just thinking of wings, man. I had a pizza the other day. I haven't had wings in so long.
Sounds like we're starting a few businesses here. Brian's wings and Peter's pizzas.
Yeah.
I'd probably just have, I don't know, more cans or something. More cans of synthetic.
Yeah. Tin peas, like just handing out tin peas at every point.
Or just a stout, like that's a substantial enough meal.
Yeah, some of them are. Listen, lads, you know where to find us. We're at Snowcast on the Facebook, Instagram, the Twitter. Engage, get in touch. Get in touch if you want anything discussed over podcast over the next few weeks. We've got some interesting mad people lined up to come on the podcast. Thanks again to Peter and to Brian for coming on. Thanks to Owen as well. And thanks from us, genuinely from the bottom of our hearts, to all of the people of New Zealand. You're all clearly listening to this podcast. We love you. And if just shout it again. If you see All Together Now by Whiplash in your local brewery, or if you're the New Zealand version of All Together Now for Whiplash in your local off license, go and pick it up. It's for a good cause. And if you're in a shop that will donate to your local food bank, please buy a few tins of said processed peas or whatever for your local food bank. People need it now more than ever. We're gonna stop recording now, lads. Have a nice fucking week, and we're gonna finish our drinks and have a lovely chat beyond this. Sláinte.
Sláinte.
Deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.